Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. Now, today I'm joined down the line by our New York Bureau Chief, Ed Stocker, who's fresh off the plane from Utah for the 2016 Sundance Film Festival. He'll be talking us through the main headlines from Park City, as well as three documentaries that caught his eye. Jim, the James Foley story, a look at the life of the American video journalist who was brutally killed by ISIS. Life Animated, which explores how Disney characters enabled a child to communicate with his family. And Nuts, the fascinating tale of the rather eccentric Dr. John R. Brinkley. That's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Well, a very warm welcome to the show, Ed. Now, you've just got back from the Sundance Film Festival in Utah. This is really a place all about wheeling and dealing and networking. Is it true that deals are done on the chairlifts, if not on skis?
It may well be true. I mean, I think a few lucky people who perhaps those who weren't having their films there, some of the filmmakers who were just there to watch, got to do some skiing. But it was a super busy year this year, so I'm not sure there would have been that much time to hit the slopes. It was one of the busiest Sundances in terms of wheeling and dealing for a long, long time. And I think largely, Gillian, this was due to the fact that we have two streaming services that are really flexing their muscles this year. I am, of course, talking about Amazon versus Netflix. They were basically going head to head to see what they could buy. But surprisingly, actually, the film that made the most amount of money was called The Birth of a Nation. It went for $17.5 million and it didn't go to one of those two. It actually went to Fox Searchlight, even though reportedly Netflix offered more money, which shows that essentially it looks like there's still kudos attached to a physical distribution and a longer run in cinemas. I mean, some of these online streaming services are trying to offer cinema releases as well as a kind of carrot to the films, but it doesn't always work because they don't have quite the same clout and connection as some of the traditional studios. Having said all of that, Amazon and Netflix did scoop up some great films. Amazon bought Manchester by the Sea, one of the films that created the most buzz. Netflix also managed to buy The Fundamentals of Caring, and actually Amazon got another great film, Wiener Dog, a comedy about a dachshund.
A competition is so fierce at Sundance. Do you see visually how PR companies go into overdrive to get their films, their talent noticed at Sundance?
I mean, there's so many people behind the scenes, you know. It's interesting how Main Street, which is the main kind of thoroughfare of the festival, changes. You have shop fronts that are completely taken over by film companies. You have people packing into the bars and restaurants. You have all these parties to try and lure people in on the sidelines. So it's much more than just the screenings. There's so many things taking place on the sidelines of this festival. It's kind of fascinating viewing to see, you know, the people from Los Angeles in their designer ski gear coming into town. And then you have the film buffs, and then you have all the PR people and all the people associated with the film. It really is a microcosm of Hollywood and also independent film, of course.
Well, let's move on to your first film, Ed. We're talking documentaries today. So the first one on your list is Jim, the James Foley story, which premiered at Sundance. This is a portrait of the video journalist who is horrifically murdered by ISIS in 2014 after being held captive. Now, Ed, can you give us a little background? Who made this film and what kind of access did the filmmaker get?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this was directed by someone who's actually been in the film industry for a long time, but this is his first feature as director. Brian Oakes is the name of the person, and he's actually a childhood friend of James Foley. So he had incredible access because it turns out, you know, all the family was on board when it came to making this film. I mean, when I first heard about this film, I felt slightly uncomfortable. My first question to myself was, is this a bit too soon? You know, James Foley was killed only in 2014. It's been less than 2 years. But then you watch the film and you see how eloquent and on board his entire family are. And it feels like they really want to talk about this. And because they know the director, they're obviously clearly extremely comfortable talking about it with him because he's, you know, almost a member of their extended family. So he manages to get, you know, very open, frank interviews from all the family members there.
certainly a level of trust. Well, let's hear a clip from the documentary, Jim.
These four guys with guns, they stop the taxi and they put Jim into the back of their van. I didn't know if I was gonna see him again.
We didn't know who was holding him. I was frantic.
ISIS was on nobody's radar.
They threatened to kill Jim.
I hadn't heard Jim's voice in 2 years.
I never, ever imagined that it would end in that fashion.
We lost all hope in captivity, but James didn't. He saw the light instead of the dark.
There's physical courage, but that's nothing compared to moral courage. If I don't have that moral courage, we don't have journalism.
A clip from the documentary Jim, the James Foley story, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. Now, Ed, there was so much media coverage leading up to and, of course, after his death. What does this documentary add to the subject?
You know, at the beginning of the film, there's almost like a mission statement from the director. He clearly states that he's not going to show the execution of his friend. The film isn't about that. In terms of what it does show, I mean, you can almost say it's slightly simplistic, the first half. It really is talking head interviews with family members and some friends. So we get a bit of background about who was Jim Foley. We learn that he was quite a restless character. He was great with people. He had wanderlust. He decided he wanted to be a journalist after doing some teaching before that. Perhaps nothing especially riveting, although certainly interesting. I think actually what makes this film is the second half. It really adds something that I certainly didn't know before watching it, which was there was a reenactment of his time in captivity, which was, you know, subtly done. But what was really incredible was all the interviews with the fellow journalists who were captured with him, talking about what his character was like, talking about their time in captivity, how the guards were with them, their nicknames, the comedy that arose in the most tragic and horrific of situations was really touching and, you know, extremely moving hearing those people talking. And actually at the screening I was at, there was a Q&A afterwards with the entire family and all those people in captivity. One of the most amazing things that I didn't know was one of the Danish journalists who was released, Jim went to give him a letter to give to his family. And this journalist didn't want to leave prison with this letter. He was scared that if he got caught with it, he wouldn't be set free. So what he did apparently was memorize it. He spent the whole of the night before his release remembering every letter in there. And then at the end of the film, at the end of this documentary, we hear that letter being read out to Jim's family. And I tell you, there was not a dry eye left in that cinema, including myself at the end of it.
Tragic. I have tears in my eyes now. Well, after its premiere, the James Foley story will debut to the public on February 6th on HBO. Next on our list is a documentary by the Oscar-winning filmmaker Roger Ross Williams. Life Animated tells the story of Owen Siskin, an autistic boy who finds refuge in animated Disney films and uses them to communicate with his family. This is based on the best-selling book by Owen's father, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Ron Siskin. In this clip we're going to hear now, Ron is telling the story of the moment that he found the puppet of Iago, a character in Aladdin, and chose to adopt his voice to spark the first conversation he ever had with his son.
I say to him, Owen, how does it feel to be you?
And I said, not good, because I don't have any friends.
Now I'm under the bedspread, and I just bite down hard, you know. I just say to myself, stay in character.
And I said, okay. Owen, when did you and I become such good friends?
And he said, when I watched Aladdin, you made me laugh. And then we talk, Owen and Iago, for a minute and a half. It's the first conversation we've ever had.
Another emotional story. That was a clip from Life Animated. Now, this is a film about a boy's relationship with well-known Disney characters. How does the director use animation within the film itself to tell the story?
Yeah, I know, Gillian. Another serious tearjerker that we're talking about right now. The animations are used extremely cleverly. We actually have, there are two types of animation. Part of Owen's life is animated separately, but we also have clips from several Disney films that are cleverly woven into the film, because essentially this is all about that. This is a boy who only seems to find solace and calm when he's watching these Disney movies. And apparently it's something that happens with other autism cases. They kind of lock onto something like this in order to express themselves to the world. You know, Owen has literally memorized all these lines from these films, and he uses different characters to express certain emotions. So when he's feeling a certain way, he might go to Dumbo. He's feeling another way, he goes to Aladdin. And he just used all these films and these clips to communicate to his family. Fascinating, given the fact that at one point they weren't sure whether he was going to recover any speech. You know, one of the greatest moments actually is when he becomes friends with Gilbert Gottfried, who actually voiced Iago, and we see those two kind of sparring together, and Owen has just remembered all the lines that he needs to feed the actor. One of the kind of touching moments, and again, you know, people very moved by this film at Sundance, and certainly one of the films that was creating the most buzz there.
Well, it's interesting because it sounds like this is a documentary very much about the magic power of cinema. Sundance is full of passionate moviegoers. This must have been the perfect audience for this film.
Definitely. And it's just another great example of a director who has obvious talent. We know he's won an Oscar before. Yes, and, you know, another example of a great documentary connecting with its audience. Another example of a director, Roger Ross Williams, managing to get excellent interviews out of people. We know his caliber from Music by Prudence, that won an Oscar for short films. You know, Owen clearly felt extremely comfortable with the director, and Roger Ross Williams spent a lot of time with the family actually even before filming this. It also actually reminds me of another film called Becoming Bulletproof, which is about a group of disabled actors filming a Western. You have to go and see that if you haven't seen it. But it creates a very kind of, it's a very human film. It's a very open, touching film, and it's able to kind of have comic moments without laughing at these people, but laughing with them. And that's what makes it so great, I think.
If you want to find out more about Life Animated, then head to lifeanimateddoc.com. We'll end with the story of the rather eccentric Dr. John Romulus Brinkley, who in the early 20th century built his empire on his cure for impotency, goat testicles. The film is called Nuts and uses animation, stock footage and talking heads to tell the story of this extraordinary man. Before we talk about it, let's hear a clip from Nuts.
First, they came bringing their own goats. Pretty soon, he had his own herd of goats out back. The patient would select a goat with which he felt the most connection. Then they would come in and do this sort of double operation.
My wife just gave birth to our first child. I am living proof
that the goat glands in my scrotus are working.
I'd show all of you right now if the ladies weren't present.
Are they shutting you down?
Is your form of medicine found in any textbook?
I highly doubt it.
Did you learn it in school?
Of course not.
Then how do you know it works?
A clip from the documentary Nuts, directed by Penny Lane. Ed, this is just such a weird, larger-than-life story. Just briefly, can you explain about this character portrayed in this documentary?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is such a great film. I think this is really an example of the best of Sundance. You know, the director, Penny Lane, who has an excellent name, by the way. the director is a teacher in upstate New York. You know, she's not a full-time director. She also teaches. She worked on this project for several years, got funding from Tribeca and also online. It's the story, a very quirky story of Dr. John Romulus Brinkley, who cured impotence apparently by grafting goat testicle glands. I don't think I need to go any further there. But I tell you why it's interesting. It's interesting because it really tries to mix up documentary film as we know it. It's not a traditional documentary in any sense of the word, namely because it uses animation to tell the story, to in a way make it more exciting and play with the audience. And so we have reenactments of how this character was. So it's almost kind of blurring the lines between drama and documentary, and it's not trying to be completely true to the story. It's not being completely true to every single tiny detail. It's instead trying to create an amusing and funny story, and there is a major twist.
It just seems, looking at the trailer, a bit sort of Monty Python like, and yet this is based on a true story. It's very it's stylistic in the making.
Well, I don't want to give it away, but it is based on a true story and it isn't based on a true story. I think that's all I can say. You have to go and see it. Actually, you feel, as an audience member, you feel a bit stupid because you just realize that you've believed everything you've been listening to, and when you actually stop and realize that some of it might not be true, you can't believe that you actually did believe it. I can't really say any more than that.
Well,
Jillian,
don't, but
it sounds
like
away.
It sounds like one of the films you have to see a couple of times for it all to make sense. It was screened at the Sundance Film Festival, and now Nuts is set to be shown at the Rotterdam International Film Festival next month. And that sadly brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Ed Stocker, over in New York. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Jillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time every day next week for a look at what February has in store for us in the arts. But for now, goodbye from me, Jillian DeBias, and thanks for listening.